What's up, campers? Welcome to another episode of Trails Podcast. Hope you all are doing well. The weather's getting nicer, the days are getting longer, so get outside.
As always, follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Trails Podcast. And show us some love wherever you listen to your podcasts. Follow, subscribe, or even leave a review, preferably a good one.
Hopefully, only a good one. But now let's get into the episode. This week's guest is Kim from the Sierra Club. Why don't you introduce yourself, Kim, and tell us and our listeners a little bit about the Sierra Club.
Yeah, thanks y'all for having me. My name is Kim Pope. I'm a campaign representative with the Sierra Club's Lands, Water, Wildlife campaign. I am based out of Tucson, Arizona, which is the occupied lands of the Tohono O'odham people. And yeah, so a little bit about Sierra Club. So we are a rather large, very influential grassroots environmental organization. And basically what we do is we amplify the power of our 3.8 million members and supporters, which is a ton of people who care about the environment, to defend everyone's right to a healthy world. So we are activists, we are people who love to be outdoors, and we use that to help influence good, sustainable policy for our world.
Yeah, and I mean, you guys have had quite the history being founded in 1892.
Yeah. Yep, we've been around a long time.
And you said you were a campaign manager for the Sierra Club. What are some of the campaigns that you guys have worked on in the past?
Yeah, so I actually just started in this role as being a campaigner for the Sierra Club. I used to work as a organizer for the Sierra Club in the state of Colorado. So I lived in Denver, but moved to Arizona last year. And as an organizer, I got to do a lot of really great work with volunteers on the ground to advocate for stopping oil and gas leasing near one of Colorado's amazing national parks, Great Sand Dunes National Park. I've also done a lot of work on just getting people outdoors, doing outings through the Rocky Mountains and things like that. And then specifically with my work now as a campaign rep in this new administration, we are focusing on the Biden administration's goal to protect 30% of lands and waters by 2030 as a measure to mitigate climate change and also just create healthier communities. So that's our big campaign that we're working on right now.
Hey, if it means that I can get back into my tent and start camping, then I like it.
Yes.
So I got a question for you about Tucson, because you said you just recently moved there from Colorado. Yeah. I myself am moving from Boston to Phoenix because I'm going to ASU next year for college.
Congrats.
Thank you. So I just kind of want to get your take on the switch and what's cool about Arizona.
Yeah, well, I have a lot to say about Arizona. So I was born and raised in a small rural community in southern New Mexico, about 3 hours away from Tucson. And I went to college at Flagstaff, Arizona, at Northern Arizona University. So I have been around Arizona for a long time. I love it here. I just did a short stint in Colorado, I call it. And Arizona is great. It's a beautiful state. You can be in the middle of the Sonoran Desert in Phoenix at 100 degrees and 2 hours later be in, you know, ponderosa pine forest at 60 degrees, or, you know, be in warm weather where you can get in a pool and then 2 hours later be in the snow. So Arizona has a really wide range of beautiful environment. We've got the Grand Canyon, which is also amazing. So I think, yeah, thinking of the change, you are definitely in moving to Phoenix. I lived in Phoenix for about 5 years after college. There are some amazing actual city mountain parks in Phoenix that I think are really incredible for access to the outdoors. So there's the Phoenix Mountain Park region, and then there's also South Mountain Mountain Park, and they all have trails all through them. They're within minutes from like the city. So you can just wake up in the morning, drive about 10 minutes and go for a like 6 mile hike if you want through the desert. So I definitely recommend checking those out. If you're going to ASU, Camelback Mountain, that's pretty close. So there's just really cool mountain parks. So it's a really great place for accessibly getting outdoors, but then also definitely recommend checking out Northern Arizona for the pine trees and some snow.
You're going to be doing more hiking than studying down there. So
yes, you'll have lots of opportunities.
So. he's leaving us, but yeah, I'm sure he's gonna spice up this podcast down from Arizona. So looking
forward to that. Yeah, I'm definitely excited for the switch in the environment, because here it's wet and it's a little cooler. There it's just desert.
Yes. So
it's I'm excited for to explore the difference.
Yeah, it's really great. You're going to have to get used to watching out for cactus when you're on the trail, making sure you don't fall in some choya. They hurt really bad. And also watching out for snakes. I had a snake in my backyard the other night. Luckily, it wasn't a bad snake, but that is a very common thing around here.
That's the one reason I could just never live in Arizona. I got to go down to Arizona once. We went down for a week. I love Arizona. That is my favorite place on probably Earth.
Yeah, you went to Sedona, you said?
Yeah, so we did a classic Grand Canyon trip,
and nice,
we got to hang out around Sedona for an evening. We watched the sunset from there, grabbed ice cream.
So cool. I
was trying to think of the name of the ice cream place, shout them out, but I can't remember.
Sedona and Oak Creek Canyon specifically, which is kind of behind Sedona, is my absolute favorite outdoor place I've ever been to. It's gorgeous. You've got red rocks, you've got pine trees. Definitely, AJ, you should go up there and check it out when you come to school here.
we checked out some of the Hopi reservations.
Oh yeah, that's nice too.
Nice. The rocks are beautiful, and the locals make some damn good artwork. So
yes.
I wish it was more accessible. And I was, you know, being a junior, I'm doing my SAT prep, and there was a whole reading on locals and their artwork. That was pretty cool to kind of learn myself on.
Yeah.
All right. So we just passed Earth Day with April 22nd, right? Kind of Earth Week. And there was a lot going on. And I know the Sierra Club, you know, takes Earth Day pretty seriously. And you guys have been doing a lot. And I've been keeping up on your Twitter. And whoever's repping your Twitter, geez.
They're pretty great, huh?
They're always on there. I'm in school and I'm getting notifications. It's great. But so like, what are some things that you guys did for Earth Day that you can share with us?
Yeah. So specifically, like you mentioned, Twitter, we have been doing kind of a long like Earth Week of actions throughout Earth Day. And then also I think for the next week. And each of those days is focusing on a different issue. And so yesterday, actually, or the 26th, was that yesterday? Yes, it was. Our campaign joined with our Outdoors for All campaign and did a Instagram Live where we used the opportunity as a chance to talk about the overlap between protections of lands, waters, and forests as part of the solution to climate change. That's a really big focus for us right now, because we know that by protecting forests, we are actually contributing to carbon sequestration, which is helping pull the carbon, which is one of the main drivers of climate change, out of the air. So there was a really great talk on Instagram Live yesterday with our campaign director about that. And really just, you know, using the opportunity, any opportunity we can to make it fun. We've had some great guests who have come on these, and also make it really informative about our goals to protect 30 by 30, and then also to stop oil and gas leasing on public lands, which is a huge contributor to climate change.
So you guys are kind of bringing, you know, the discussion to the table.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. One thing I like, because DT and I, and on this podcast, we try to promote people to go outside and, you know, enjoy what we have. But I think what I like with you guys is you're making it so when people do go outside, the nature is still there and everything is protected and everything like that is all set.
Yeah, I think it's really important.
Yep. So I think Aditi and I love camping. I try to go at least once a month nice. With our Boy Scout troop. But turn it over to you on some camping. So how did you get started with camping and camping stories?
I don't know. I wasn't talking to you over email. That was AJ. So have you been camping?
Yes, of course.
I'm from Arizona and Colorado. So if I didn't camping, I think I'd be pretty disappointed.
Yeah, no, I love camping. I actually technically was kind of like a later in life convert to camping. So I grew up, like I said, in southern New Mexico in a pretty rural part of the state. And so when you grow up and in a place where outside, like nature is just like out your back door, you don't really go camping as much. And also my dad, he worked for the Forest Service my entire life. So the Forest Service is the government agency that manages all of our national forests across the country. And he worked there his entire career. And so I grew up going out with him all the time to the forest to like observe the way the trees were growing and like measure grass growth and go observe, endangered frogs and minnows in the forest that he specifically worked on, which is the Gila National Forest in southern New Mexico. So we really didn't do like a ton of actual camping, but we were always outdoors. I did a lot of horseback riding and hunting and things like that as a kid. So not huge into camping until I got older and I went to college. And I actually got a job in college as a camp counselor in Prescott, Arizona. Super fun job if you like kids and you want to spend a whole summer sitting on a lake. It's great, great gig, highly recommend. Working as a camp counselor, we actually had to take our kids out camping every single 2-week session that we had campers. And that was my first experience of really like camping out with children. So camping with, you know, like 20 fifth graders. So I really got a good experience kicking that off.
Sure, that was a blast.
It was.
So you've always kind of been involved with protecting the great outdoors and what Mother Nature's provided us. I mean, down to your dad's job. So
yes.
Yeah, I think on this podcast where, you know, we love to, you know, emphasize getting outside and, you know, really using what we have. But I think we've kind of overlooked the whole protecting what we have. And I think I'm glad that we're able to talk this out with you.
Yeah, and I think it's a good thing to think about because if you want to be able to continue enjoying the outdoors, you want to keep it for the future generations, for you and your potential children and their potential children and so forth. You have to enjoy it, but also protect it.
Right. So are you still camping? You still an active camper?
Yeah, I generally will spend, well, so in Colorado, I'd spend all summer going out camping to different parts of the Rocky Mountains. I had some friends that we would go pick a place just kind of randomly and camp for a few days. Of course, with all of the camping gear of s'mores and everything like that. Haven't gone yet here. So that's one thing that's different in Arizona is that you really don't want to go camping in the summer because it's so hot unless you go up north. So your camping schedule is going to change a little bit.
Up with that, AJ.
Yeah.
One thing, sorry, that I want to touch on just quickly before we continue on is from growing up, it seems like you have a pretty unique perspective of the outdoors and nature in general because of, you know, going with your dad and everything. What would you say is your favorite aspect of like the outdoors or nature? Like, what's your favorite piece if you can pick just one? I know it's hard, but.
Yeah, that is hard. For me, I think just going outdoors and walking around and noticing the things, you know, about the wildlife, about the plants, and really experiencing just the feeling of calm. I think it's, you know, there's a lot of different things that people get out of being outdoors. And one of the ones that I don't think we talk about as much as we should is the health benefits that it provides. You know, it's a great place to go out and rejuvenate yourself and to kind of, you know, reconnect with the things that are around you. And that's something that I grew up really valuing is understanding that we are, you know, we are part of the earth. We are part of the ecosystem. We're not just out there, you know, trampling all over it and owning it. And so to me, like having that experience is what's the most valuable.
Yeah, we've definitely noticed some of those health benefits, and I think we talked about those in one of our season one episodes, the benefits of camping. I don't remember what number, but
yeah, That's cool. Yeah,
we kind of broke those down. There's a lot of just being outdoors, anywhere outside really has so many positive health benefits. I mean, mental health, social health, physical health. Yeah, I'll tell you that one for sure. I mean, after my camping trips, I feel like I can't walk or move for 48 hours. It's like I have school the next day, but all I want to do is just lie in bed.
Right? Yeah. It's like natural exercise. Who needs a gym?
We kind of talked about like camping and everything, but can we kind of want to get some more specific like sure. stories, like some of your best places you've gone camping and some good memories you've had at those places.
Give us the best and give us the worst.
All right. Well, I'll start with the worst. I don't know if it's really the worst, but it's a really good story. So I'm going to tell it to you. So when I was a camp counselor at Friendly Pines Camp in Prescott, Arizona, it's really, really great, really wholesome. On one of the camping trips that we did with the kids, there's about four or five of us counselors that take a whole like age range of campers out camping. And the kids sleep in these big kind of like army canvas tents. And the counselors usually just throw a tarp out on the ground and sleep under the stars, which is incredible, right? But it's not incredible if it rains. And so we went on this trip, this camping trip, and we had a camper throw up in her tent. That was fun. So we had to clean all that up, got her back to bed, got everybody calmed down. We got the campers asleep. We were exhausted, all set up on our tarp and our sleeping bags. And then it starts raining. So we all grabbed our bags and we had like a couple of vans that we drove the kids out in. And they're just these like old kind of school vans, if you can imagine them. And so we ran into the vans. We all took like a place in each van, but in Arizona during monsoon season, it's still hot, but it's raining. So we had, we opened up the back of each van and there was like someone sleeping in the trunk, someone sleeping in the middle and someone in the front. And then all of a sudden we hear this like kind of weird noise that sounds a little bit like horses clopping close to us, right? And so we ask the people, the girls, the counselors in the van next to us, like, hey, what's that noise? Can you guys see? And then all of a sudden we just hear them go, oh my gosh, it's a whole bunch of javelina. Do you guys know what javelina are? Okay. So javelina are these like pig-like animals that are about the size of dogs, maybe a little bit bigger. And they have these crazy tusks. So they're kind of like wild boars, but they're not actually related to them, and they only live in the Southwest, and they can be really terrifying. So it was, they go, it's a whole bunch of javelina, and we're like, oh my gosh, what do we do? And all we hear from this other van is just the sound of them slamming their door shut really slowly and leaving us there to try to figure out what to do. And we're like, okay, so we got to make sure the campers are okay, we got to make sure of that. So we ended up getting out and just chasing them away, and it's like pouring on us, the kids are all still asleep. It was nuts. The next morning we were exhausted, but that was like a really funny, also at the time, awful camping experience that I had.
Love camping.
Yes, pretty much.
Everything that could go wrong just about went wrong.
Yes. Yeah. But
like also when it kind of sucks and it's horrible in the moment, it always has a good story afterwards.
Exactly. My friends and I talk about that story all the time now, because camp friends are your best friends and we're still all friends 10 years later.
Yeah, we as scouts have seen our fair share of rain. I'm happy to say we haven't seen our fair share of javelina. I'm looking forward to getting a text from AJ saying that he got trampled by a horde of javelina.
Could happen.
I'm going to stay up here in the Northeast where there's fewer snakes and trees.
Yeah.
You have a blast in Arizona. I'm sure that's great. But Kim, we talked about, all right, so that was the worst. So what was the best or most memorable?
Yeah, I get this one is also in Arizona, which makes it sound like I'm giving Colorado a bad rap on camping. It's great to camp in Colorado. It's beautiful. The mountains are really high, great weather. But this one's really special because I went camping when I lived in Flagstaff, Arizona. There's just a ton of campgrounds around there. And they're usually really accessible and available, which is great. And something that you don't find specifically in places like Colorado, where everybody is going outdoors. You have to fight for a campsite. So it was in Flagstaff, near Flagstaff, Arizona. And I went camping with a friend. And then also at the time I was volunteering with Big Brothers Big Sisters. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that. And I had a little brother that we took out there, and we got out there and we were so excited and he was so excited. And we went to like set up our fire for the evening to make hot dogs, of course. And we realized that we had literally nothing like to make the hot dogs with. We forgot to bring everything for cooking. And so my friend and the little boy that I was mentoring, like, created this crazy contraption out of sticks that kind of like looked like a grate that we like stuck hot dogs on and like roasted them on the fire. I still have a picture of it. It's hilarious. And it was just so fun and so silly. And the pine trees are beautiful, the ponderosa pine. And we ended up teaching him how to play poker. And so we played poker with Oreos all night, and it was just a lot of fun. So that's definitely one of my best camping experiences.
Yeah, I mean, I can completely resonate with that one. I mean, with the troop, it's like, whatever you don't bring, you live without. So
exactly.
I think one trip we were making pasta and we forgot the like the spaghetti strainers. I don't remember if we
used one of the spoons with the holes in it, and we just like scooped the pasta out very slowly. We tried like having a lid and like slowly straining it out.
Nothing really.
Yeah, we tried everything.
Got to like grab a fork and just kind of individually. The spaghetti strainers always remind me of I didn't want to mispronounce the word colander, which I think I don't know how to pronounce that word. It's We have a kid who always wears Crocs, and so we call him spaghetti strainers. And that's kind of what came to mind first. We always do trail names or nicknames. I was Aditya just because my name is Aditya. AJ's Big Mac. Or no, you're Lil Mac. And then your dad.
Mini-me. Mini-me. My dad's Big Mac. I'm Mini-me.
Yeah. That's cute. I like it.
Aditya resonated with the forgetting things. I resonated a lot with the Oreos and the poker.
Yeah.
You know, my biggest flaw when playing poker with food is I always just ate all my chips and I ran out of money.
Yeah, that doesn't work. We eventually ate it all, but
I think that's just the best way to lose your money. Why give it to someone else when you can kind of...
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. One last question before we go to our ad break. If you could camp, if you could go someplace again, where would you go? Because usually we don't want to have to repeat campsites, but we have to only because there's only so far we can go with COVID. You know, yes. We can't fly the troop out to Arizona. I wish. Oh my God, that would be so fun. But for you, if you could go, if you could repeat a campsite, where would you go?
Yeah, so this one is kind of unique and also ties in with one of Sierra Club's priorities. So I, a few years ago, got the opportunity to go camp at Bears Ears National Monument, which is in southeastern Utah. It's also a place that right now we're advocating to restore to its full boundaries. The previous administration cut down the boundaries for it and really cut out a lot of pivotal places, including this place that I went camping, which was kind of just out in the middle of nowhere. And the reason I was there is because I signed up just kind of on a whim to volunteer to do a paleontology dig with some paleontologists from a local university. And they were just looking for volunteers to come out and camp for like 4 or 5 days and do this dig with them. And they were taking anybody who was willing to sit and, you know, dig up bones basically. And so it was just so beautiful. It's like red dirt and juniper trees everywhere and beautiful big mountains and rocks. And I had such a good time. It was exhausting to go, and we literally dug the side of a hill off to go find these really ancient bones of like a, you know, million year old alligator type thing. And we did find it, like we found the whole nose and everything. It was awesome. But gosh, it was just so beautiful. I would go back there, maybe not dig and like kill myself for 4 days, but just to hang out and do some hiking. But it was really fun. It's a really beautiful place. And I'm really looking forward to them restoring the boundaries of Bears Ears.
Hey, you've got our email now. So next time you get one of those opportunities, I expect to see a forwarded email in my inbox.
I will. Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
just a trip down to Utah. Yeah, I'd do anything for that. Probably get. Yeah. I'd worry about school later. Who cares about that? All right, we've come a long way. We're gonna take a quick ad break. We'll see you guys after. We're back. Hope you guys like that ad. It's the same ad that runs every episode. So, oh well. We're joined with Courtney now. Courtney's with us. So I guess to both of you, Courtney, first off, have you been camping? Do you go camping often?
Yes, so I would say I am a novice camper compared to the stories I've heard here today. So my camping experiences are minimal comparatively as I am a city slicker in Chicago.
Chicago, oh, okay. Yeah, so you're camping on like rooftops.
Yeah, we're camping on the side of the streets, at bus station. No, I'm kidding.
Right before the concert, yeah, to get the latest pair of shoes. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Okay. All right. So, well, if you could, to both of you, if you guys could camp anywhere in the world, where would it be? Whoever's got an answer can go first.
Go for it, Courtney.
I would really love to get out to the Patagonia Mountains. I think that's a lifelong goal. I think the concept of camping out there is a little bit terrifying given my low outdoor skill level, but that's a place I really want to go. And I would love to do like a backpacking camping trip if I were to spend like 2 years getting physically fit enough for it.
I would say, you know, maybe this is kind of cheating because I've been there already, but I really want to camp there is I have a friend who lives in like along the southern coast of Australia, and I visited there a couple of years ago, and the water is just so beautiful and it's really kind of remote, and I would love to just go and camp in the outback, as they call it, or the bush. You can't say forest in Australia, they get really upset. They're like, no, it's the bush. I'm like, okay. And I would love to go just like backpacking, camping around the coast of southern Australia.
Yeah, some of the previous answers have been, I think we said Japan for one of them. Our third guy, Andrew, who's actually talking to a Navy recruiter right now, he said Japan. And then I think my go-to is like Eastern Europe and like the rocky areas of Eastern Europe. It would be pretty cool for me. I'm kind of like, I like the cold weather camping, you know, dense forest, finding mountains. I love climbing. So I think, AJ, I forget what you say.
I said Iceland or Scotland.
Right. You're the Iceland guy.
Yeah.
Well, you guys want to be cold.
Yeah. Well, AJ said Scotland, so I just I always make the joke that he's going to go camping on a hole 18. I'll come by early morning and just with my driver wake him up. 180 yards away. But all right. And then glamping. I don't know. Have you guys been glamping? Please say so.
No,
I feel like my camping in general could be considered glamping, though I feel that it's really taken a step up. Like glamping is becoming nicer than like staying at a hotel, which like raises some questions for me, but.
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, it's just like, I don't know. I'm so vocal about how I just don't like glamping. And, you know, if you're like pulling up with an RV that's got like a 24-inch TV, modern day plumbing, a gas stove, and like a twin or like a king size bed in the back, that's not camping. Just stay at home, please. and, you know, save the spot for someone else. that's just, you could tell I'm very passionate about my position on glamping. That's why AJ has just made this a constant question on the show.
When we first started the podcast, and DT has always been against glamping. Originally, I was like, okay with glamping, you know, if it encourages people to like go outside and everything, I guess that's good. But throughout the course of this whole thing, he's slowly convinced me that, you know, glamping's not the greatest thing. And like, even if they are going outside, if they're like enjoying the amenities of home and like all that stuff, are they really enjoying the outdoors and all that? So
yeah, and I guess
a DTO rubs off on you a little bit.
I mean, to bring it to you, kind of like your mission statement and all with, you know, environmental, protecting the environment and environmental action, like if you're out there using all the amenities that you have while you're at home, you know, you could easily be distracted and litter, or just, you know, you're creating pollution and things like that. And so, you know, glamping leads to carelessness in the outdoors. And while I didn't realize that now, I'm realizing it now, and glamping just sucks even more. Look at that.
You know, I had to push back a little bit in the sense of I've definitely seen some folks glamping who are pretty passionate about the outdoors. It's just that in their age or with children, you know, they might want the conveniences of that glamping. So like the RV style. And I feel like you do also get the folks who are tent camping, and they're also kind of, some of them can be like also very irresponsible in the outdoors as well. So I think you get like a mixture, but I think we always try to, you know, amplify, like, we want as many people to get out and enjoy the outdoors as possible, because the more people can understand their connection with nature, which we all have, the more they're inclined to really become stewards and activists to protect it. So we are all promotion for people and as many people in the outdoors, get outside, what you guys are saying too. Obviously there are times, places, and ways to act in the outdoors that respects the environment. The wildlife who live on the land, the endangered plants, like all of that stuff we come across on pretty popular camping sites. You need to be cognizant. And I think a big piece of that is really just educating yourself on the local environment before you go into those spaces. Absolutely. And a lot of times, like out west, you know, you're in lands that are home and sacred to indigenous nations, and you should really learn about their customs and their history before visiting those places. So we always do try to encourage that, you know, local education and outreach before you do visit these places, so that you can be a better steward when you're enjoying them.
I like that. Mm-hmm. That's pretty good. Yeah, I'm all for education, regardless of what it is. So that's good. Yeah. I mean, and that's kind of like being prepared to go camping. And I think that ties that Sierra Club idea into the process. You know, before we go somewhere, we want to be prepared. We want to know what we're seeing. We want to make sure, you know, we're staying on the trail, we're following the outdoor code. So that's cool. Yeah, that those both kind of mesh together neatly. All right. So what are some of the latest news and projects from the Sierra Club? What are you guys working on now? Wrapping up of April 2021. What's coming next for the Sierra Club?
I guess I can kick this off with just, there's two big reports that are going to be coming out in the next few months from the Department of the Interior, which the Department of the Interior is the main land manager for a wide range of lands in the United States, including tribal lands. And the first one is going to be coming out hopefully this week. That's going to talk about the administration's plans and ideas for protecting 30% of lands and waters in the United States by 2030. And I kind of talked about this earlier about how, you know, this is a goal that scientists have agreed upon that we need to make sure that we are mitigating climate change and also helping protect healthy communities across the world. And so that's going to be a really big thing that we're going to be amplifying, and then working on how we can bring that report and what needs to be done to get us there down into the states, and working with our grassroots to advocate for those protections. So that's the first one. And then the second one we're expecting in early summer that is going to lay out how the administration is planning to phase out fossil fuel extraction on public lands, which is a huge deal right now. And I could get percentages. I think a quarter of, and Courtney can correct me on this, a quarter of greenhouse gas emissions in the United States actually comes from drilling on public lands, which is huge. And so the administration has taken a strong stance to pause all new oil and gas leasing on public lands currently, and then also is going to come up with a plan for how to phase that out. So we're going to be working on that a lot as well. Courtney, I don't know if you have other stuff to add.
Yeah, definitely. Just kind of supporting that work. And my role as a communications person is to really uplift the voices of people who are working on these things. And also this, we've seen such a new slew of activists and people who are interested in the outdoors, especially since the pandemic and quarantine happened. People are using the outdoor spaces to retreat, get away from people, and have an outlet when we're all in really hard times right now. So we've seen more and more people grow connected to outdoor spaces and really join the effort to try and protect them. So we're really hoping to use that momentum right now to bring those people on board with our mission and really uplift their voices and how they're connected to nature and why it's so important to protect it.
It's perfect.
That's some great things to hear from you guys. But what can our listeners, what can our podcast, DT and I, what can we do to help the Sierra Club? And also, what can we do in our communities that's not necessarily with the Sierra Club?
How can we help?
Yeah, I think first of all is you can check out our website, sierraclub.org. We have a public lands page on there that will direct you to some actions that you can take for Sierra Club, you know, sign a petition, et cetera. But I think in your communities, I mean, there's hopefully now with some more things opening back up, there's more opportunities to safely participate. I think something that's really important to me personally, and I think helps the community a lot, is participating in stewardship projects in your own community. Like go help clean up a park, go, you know, do trail maintenance if you want to really get into it. Sign up to do things like that, because that is like the most localized way that you can help protect and sustain a landscape, and it helps everybody. So that's one thing that I think would be really great for folks to do in their local communities this summer.
Courtney, anything else that, you know, we can do to help, you know, work towards your goals?
Yeah, for sure. I think another thing too is that I think we're so in the mindset always of like decisions happen at such a high level of government that it's hard for local folks like us to really get into the process. But the wonderful thing about sustainability and lands conservation is that it happens on such a hyper local level. So you can really get out to your meetings, which now I'm sure virtually get out to your meetings and really learn about the decisions, you know, people like your county commissioners and your city council are making, because they're actually having the real impacts on how our land are used and what type of recycling programs we have in the community and things that are really contributing to the overall success of our environmental movement. So I would say just, you know, start looking into ways to attend local government meetings and reach out to people and talk about these issues. It's really important.
Yeah, it's clear that you guys are very passionate about the environment. And I see, you know, I was just scrolling through your website. You guys have been doing a lot of work for a lot of different people, no matter, you know, background, race, ethnicity. I just learned about the Sierra Club when AJ pitched me this idea of working with you guys. And I'm going through your website as we speak. There's so many different, there's the little things, you know, reduce single waste, single use products, and, you know, ask for paper at the grocery store instead of plastic, just the little things. But I was just like, yeah, I guess what else can, beyond that basic, waste reduction, can we do to work with the Sierra Club and for someone else who's kind of wants to get back into protecting the environment or work specifically with the Sierra Club, how can they do that?
Yeah. So I think like you brought up a really good thing. So like people can on the individual level, you know, they can compost their food, they can stop using single use plastics. But the great thing about Sierra Club is like, we use those individual actions to influence policy and corporate decision making. So we are currently campaigning several companies to eliminate or phase out single-use plastic in their products. So large food companies, large beverage companies, that type of thing, where folks can sign petitions, they can post on social media to really get out the word about having this, like, using their individual actions and their values to really get out this global effort. And that's kind of, you know, who we are as the Sierra Club. And that's why the more we can amplify this work and get out the word, get out the word about it, then we're really helping to achieve larger goals here. And that's really what we focus on.
That's awesome. All right. Anything else from the both of you from the Sierra Club?
I had one more thing that I just thought of in terms of how you can help is something that, you know, as we talk about using lands and being outdoors and enjoying them. Courtney mentioned this earlier, also considering the fact that these are indigenous lands that were taken from indigenous tribes. So I think something that could be really cool that you all in your position as like being part of a scout troop is research into whose land you are on. Who are the indigenous tribes that used to be prevalent in this land that lost access or that is now being occupied? And you know, just make an acknowledgement of that before you go camping and, like, you know, educate yourself on what that looks like, because I think that's a really important part of the history of lands and how we use them and how we view them. So that was just a last little plug for something you can do very localized in your community on lands.
That's a great suggestion. We'll have to bring that up. We actually have a leaders meeting next weekend. So Aditya and I will try to bring it up then to do that. But we're kind of wrapping it up, but we've kind of been, you know, serious, a little bit of silly this whole time. So I kind of want to go off a little bit and ask you both a question. If you could be any sea animal, what would it be?
AJ loves it. Loves just the bizarre question.
Mix it up a little bit.
He's the king of dad jokes too. So you'll have to hit us with one after that. Any sea.
I was gonna ask if being a mermaid counted, but I won't. I'll talk about our natural environment since that's what we work on. You know, I forgot the name of it now, but I watched this amazing documentary, and I'm sure that some of you have seen it, on that guy who becomes really good friends with an octopus. And it just, like, increased my respect of octopi. So much, because they are such an intelligent species that I'm just like, and they kind of like own the oceans, that I'm kind of like, you know, it would be really cool to be an octopus. So that's probably my answer right now.
That was literally my answer as well, because I've been thinking the same thing of like, they're so smart and so cool. And like, I could change colors whenever I want. I mean, come on. Like, that's awesome.
AJ, I hope you had an answer to your own question.
Yeah, I did. I would go with a dolphin.
Dolphin.
You know, you usually see them more in like tropical waters, so that's a cool place to be. And also, they're known as being pretty smart animals, and I like to think of myself as being pretty smart. So we got that connection.
I think I'd either be. I want to say a shark, just because that's like the basic answer, but I'm gonna go with sea turtle. Turtles are so cool. And I can't stop thinking about that super stone turtle from Finding Nemo. It just goes with the flow. That would be me. I would just be, you know, riding the currents, picking up stray fish who got separated from their dad. And we would just keep swimming. So, boom. There's your Finding Nemo reference for the day.
I like it.
Cool. AJ, do you have a dad joke for us before we end?
Yeah, sure. I'll get one off the top of my head. Here's a Confucius saying: man who runs behind car gets exhausted, and man who runs in front of car gets tired.
Yep.
That's great.
Very nice.
I hate you so much, but it's fine. Okay. I think that's it. Looks like our fire's dying down. For the late afternoon, we usually film at night, so but thank you guys so much for all your support on season 2. Kim and Courtney, thank you guys for being here. This was a blast. I hope to keep in touch. I definitely want to get involved. I feel like me personally, you know, I haven't thought of it as much as I have, as much as I would have liked, you know, protecting the environment and all. I think it's kind of become second nature, but taking a more active step into that is going to be the goal. And I hope
me as well. I'd like to thank you guys. And I think some of the stuff you guys brought up and, you know, it's kind of an eye opener, I know, for me and I think Aditi as well. So hopefully you guys can continue everybody else's and giving them information and opening their like minds to all this stuff. And hopefully everybody else can help. And you know, everyone who's listening to this now will go out and do even just like one small act can be pretty good.
And hey, you guys have a few more friends on the Eastern Seaboard. So if you ever need anything on this side of town, you let us know. that's it.
Thank you.
It's all right. Thanks.
Thank you guys.
All right. We'll talk to you later. Thank you.
Bye. Bye.
For our listeners at home, we'll see you next time on Tales of the Trails.
Peace out.